Hello and welcome to Mega City Book Club, the podcast all about the galaxy's greatest comics, mostly British ones. I'm Eamon Clark and my guest is a new member of the book club. It's a very warm welcome on this Monday evening to Peter McKinney. Peter, welcome to the book club.
Hello, thank you for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure, Peter. Now, you've got in touch with me to discuss possibly one of the most controversial stories in the history of 2000 AD, but we'll get to that in a moment because, as ever, as a first-time book clubber, we've got to do your 2000 AD origin story. How did you start with comics and the prog?
So my comics journey, I mean, I've always been a comic books fan. I remember being very little, reading the Beano and Dandy, Wizard and Chips, you know, that's a brilliant way into comic books, really. My first real comic books love was the Transformers comic, the Marvel UK Transformers comic, which I'm sure, many people my age would have got into it. I can't remember the exact issue I got into it, but it was the one where Blaster had to be rescued from the smelting pit, and that was it. I was caught. It was grim and violent. I think that was a Bob Budiansi story. And then when Simon Furman took over the British writing, all that was amazing, really. His run with Galvatron and Ultra Magnus, Time Wars. Yeah, so I very much the Transformer comics, it got me going. Then when I sort of phased out of that after issue 250 or so, vaguely remember that, and I was bouncing around British comic books. I remember reading Havoc, Meltdown, quite a big fan of Overkill. That was really, really good. And then, so I was quite late 2000 AD. I think I must have been 13 or 14. And it was it was 1993. And it was the Spring Attack or something like that, where it had, Armored Gideon Volume 2. It had, Bad Company, the Kano story. So that quite a sad story. And it had Firekind, which was really great as well. And I remember being, that was it. I was hooked. I thought that was a really good run of stories. And that was it. And I read 2000 AD up until just before just around the movie came out. I can't remember what year that was. 95,
yeah.
And I also read the magazine. I really got into the magazine. And then I think when I was a teenager, by that time I was 17 or 18, sort of drifted away from comic books a little bit. But obviously sort of graphic novels kept me going. I got back into graphic novels with Watchmen, a lot of the Alan Moore stuff, Grant Morrison stuff as well. And then obviously since then I've been reading comic books and graphic novels ever since, really. So lots of British stuff, lots of American stuff. I also got into all the X titles in the 90s quite heavily. So within the X-Men were rebooted. I was at secondary school, so I really got into that. And then X-Force and X-Factor. That was all amazing. And then ever since then, I've, obviously been an avid comic book reader.
Fantastic stuff. Well, we did Transformers in Marvel UK not that long ago, which I recorded at Thought Bubble, which is funny because I've just booked for Thought Bubble this year in November. So hopefully I'll be recording some sort of episode while I'm there as well. And Firekind, you mentioned. That's an interesting one, which hasn't yet been picked for the book club. But anyway, so you start with the prog in spring 1993.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, after spring comes another season, and we get to today's book. So I'm going to take a deep breath as you introduce what we're talking about today.
So we are talking about Big Dave, possibly the most controversial 2000 AD strip ever, which is saying something considering some of the stories and comic books that 2000 AD has had over its very long history. But it is certainly the most controversial. It kicked up a huge fuss at the time. It went out of shock, I think. It was actually in the Summer Offensive, wasn't it? They called it the Summer Offensive, which is where a trio of amazing writers took over. That it was obviously Mark Miller, Grant Morrison, and John Smith. And they were just given carte blanche to write what they like. It was mainly Morrison and Miller did the writing. They did most of the stories. Obviously, John Smith did one as well. And it was an interesting experiment. I think it was really there to try and juice up sales, wasn't it? I think sales was a bit of a problem. Mm. So they were banking on these burgeoning megastars, really, to really boost sales. But it probably slightly backfired. I think we might say that.
And we will talk about that. Okay, so Big Dave by Mark Miller and Grant Morrison, art by Steve Parkhouse, who also lettered, I think, edited by Alan McKenzie, taking over towards the end of Richard Burton's tenure as Tharg. And we're going to be talking about the first two stories, Target Baghdad and Monarchy in the UK. So we are on, as I say, July 1993, progs 842 all the way through to 849. There are, of course, a couple more Big Dave stories the next year, I think. And he was also, Young Dave was in the 2000 yearbook. I'm going to say, as far as I know, never collected or reprinted Big Dave. And we'll probably come to that as well.
No, I did some research and I couldn't find any.
We both went back to the progs for this one.
Yeah. I had to go up to the attic and get them out.
Okay, so a challenging pick for the book club, one that you emailed me about. And I'm going to say that it's not, we haven't picked this necessarily because you liked the story. Tell us a little bit about, you know, your relationship with Big Dave and why you've particularly chosen it for us.
I just think it's a fascinating story. I think you're right. If I was to say it's not one of my favourite 2000 stories, but over the years it's stayed with me, mainly and not just because of the controversy, you know, the sort of furore afterwards, but because what it was trying to do. I think it really, I think it had a longer lasting impact and is more complicated than what it seems on the surface. So I wrote a blog about it a couple of years ago, trying to get my head around it. So when I reread it again after many years, a couple of years ago, I could see there was more depth or more attempt at depth in it than perhaps when I initially read it that was there. So, yeah, I think what it is it's fascinating, really, a really interesting attempt at a story. Maybe not successful, but certainly I think there's more going on.
Okay, well, for anybody who doesn't know, give us a quick sort of synopsis. Who is Big Dave and what's going on in these first two stories?
So Dave is the hardest man in Manchester, and he's basically a shell suit wearing racist, sexist, homophobic hooligan. He basically doled out ultra violence and went out of his way to offend everyone. He's the worst kind of person. If you met someone like that in real life, you would very quickly do a runner. So he appeared, you're right, in the summer offensive in two stories. The first one was Target Baghdad, where he's enlisted by the British government to save the army who have been turned gay by an alien love gun. Some aliens have been enlisted by Saddam Hussein. So they partner up Big Dave with Big Terry, who is a sort of macho version of Terry Waite. He was quite a famous figure back then. And they have to save the British army and defeat Saddam. That was the introduction to the first story, really. And then the second story is possibly my favourite one, which is Monarchy in the UK, which is a great name, where Dave doesn't get his £36 gyro in the post. So he decides to confront the Queen and the royal family about this. Obviously, he thinks they're in charge, but then gets embroiled in a conspiracy by Princesses Di and Fergie to replace the royal family with rather naff robots so they can take over the royal family.
And, of course, great gag is that we can see how naff the robots are. Big Dave can't, apparently.
No. It was, yeah. It's a particularly controversial moment in Monarchy in the UK, where Dave is sort of confronted by both the real comic book royals and the robot royals, and because he's monumentally stupid, he kills the real royal family and then doesn't realise what he's done. So yes, it's that is basically the tone of Big Dave.
Okay, well let's. I've got a slightly different order to things for this particularly challenging story. Let's start with the summer offensive. As you said, 2000 AD in the 90s is starting, well, it's already reached that period where its original audience has aged out, and it's going to launch one of its periodic attempts to drive up sales and bring back readers or get new readers. Tell us about the summer offensive. You've mentioned it was like the three creators with a proposal for Tharg, wasn't it?
Yeah. So they basically wanted to take over. And I think 2000 AD was just looking to try and drive up the audience, get readers on board. Because obviously, as you said, you know, readers were probably aging out. They were moving on, obviously. I think the comic book had a bit of a loss of identity, because when so many of the original creators had gone as well. They went off to work in the States, hadn't they? Many of them. So good on them. So I guess for, you know, Morrison, Miller and John Smith were the next generation of coming megastars coming out. So, you know, I guess it was an interesting proposal for them to do. And they did, and there was a number of different storylines. They did a Dread story, an epic called Inferno, wasn't it, I think?
That's it, yeah.
Where a bunch of judges who had been found guilty of breaking the law had found a way and rioted on the prison planet of Titan and came back to lay waste to Dread and Mega City 1. There was Maniac 5, which was a sort of cyborg war story. It parallels a sort of Vietnam. Maniac 5 is sort of a brain in a robot body. There was quite a trippy story called Really and Truly, which was, with some lovely sort of artwork. And then there was John Smith's story as well, where it was... Slaughter Bowl, thank you, yes. Slaughter Bowl, which was actually one of my favourites of that run because it's basically convicts grafted robotically to dinosaurs in a big race slaughtering each other, so which again had a little bit of social commentary in it as well, but it's also sort of slightly gloriously over the top. So there was a real tone of sort of over the top, sort of slightly out of the scandalized, I think, and maybe sort of attract attention to the comic book. It was interesting, and it was a bit of a contrast from when I'd started as well. So to have so early on in my 2000 AD reading career, part of it was like, is it always like this? So because I was so new to it as well. I mean, obviously Judge Dredd's always been a controversial character, but yeah. I mean, the strips were of varying quality, I think. I think the Dredd Mega Epic, since then I've read, obviously, your Judgment Days and your Necropolises, and it doesn't really hold a candle to those classic or even subsequent Mega Epics, I think. So I'm not sure that was good. Maniac 5 was fine. Steve Yowell's artwork is fantastic. And there's a real sense, you know, the action scene. It's like an action movie, and the sense of that is great. Really and Truly was just a bit of fluff, really. He was quite trippy. I think Grant Morrison said he'd taken a lot of drugs and wrote it in 48 hours. And you can kind of, in hindsight, you can kind of tell. So it's kind of nothing. And like I say, I quite like Slaughter Bowl. But out of all of them, Big Dave was the one that really stood out, I think, for lots of reasons.
And of those stories, I think Inferno gets a little bit of talking about, but it's Big Dave that is still talked about for a variety of reasons. Obviously, you know, covered on Space Spinner 2000, there's been blogs about it, including your own, which we'll come to later on. The Summer Offensive was supposed to gain readers. We know from various interviews and Thrill Power Overload, of course, that it probably didn't.
No. There's a quote from John Tomlinson, isn't there, I think, where he says, we'd be hoping to gain readers and we probably lost them. So I do feel slightly sorry for the writers. You know, that's a lot to put on their shoulders, isn't it, really, to sort of find new readers. And I think what really damaged 2000 AD was when they changed distributor about a year before, wasn't it? They lost a lot of readers then. So it was a bit hard on the creators anyway. You know, there were structural things happening. But there was certainly the hope was that these superstars could sort of attract new readers. And obviously the interesting thing about Big Dave was it's not science fiction, really. It was set in the present. It was sort of set in 90s Britain and actually had, you know, real characters in there, not just the royal family, but obviously the Prime Minister of the time, John Major, Saddam Hussein. It felt more like akin to, in some respects, to Private Eye in some ways, as in that sort of, you know, sort of satire. It's a bit more like Spitting Image than science fiction, I think. So, yeah, so absolutely.
Okay, well, we're going to come to Grant Morrison and Mark Miller in a moment. But before we do that, I'm going to start us with the artwork, because I think that's the easier part. Steve Parkhouse in black and white for these two stories. What do you make of his artwork on Big Dave?
Just fantastic, particularly the second story, but even the first one. And what it is, I guess, because it's black and white, is very evocative of tabloid newspapers. I think for me, Big Dave is an attempt to satirise those newspapers because they were very powerful at the time. And even back in the early 90s, they weren't all colour. They were still black and white. And so I think the black and white, it really, really sort of captures the tone of those papers, the feel and the look of them. I think the first story, Target Baghdad, the artwork is quite good, but I think he really gets into a stride with monarchy in the UK. It's there's a slightly scratchy but quality to it, but it's a lot of detail. Yeah, and it's great. So it's really amazing, really. So I think the art, probably the best thing about it is the artwork, really. And what's amazing about Steve Parkhouse is actually the way he can tell a story. He can take that strip and he can really sort of he can add something extra to it. He's very fun. He's very, clearly very good at doing comedy as well. So the caricatures of the characters are great. He's John Major in the first couple of episodes. Was it episode 2 of Target Baghdad? Yeah, he really nails the sort of spirit of a slightly tetchy sort of politician who doesn't quite know how to cope with Dave's general awfulness. So, yeah. And the fact there was that sort of stereotype that the Major was quite a mild-mannered man and he was getting a bit grumpy. It was very good. So, yeah, it is great. It is really the spirit, I think, they captured of the newspapers were amazingly well, really.
Yeah, he does. And, of course, he does that famous cover for 843, which is like the Soaraway 2000 AD or Soaraway Sun parody of a tabloid cover, which is great stuff. I mean, I say this about some comic artists who just have the ability to draw funny, that when they draw something or someone, it's just funny to look at for some reason. Yeah. And Steve Parkhouse, I always thought, had that ability really, you know, perfectly. Black and white, I think, suits him best.
Yeah.
You know, later on, he returns on the fourth story, I think, in colour, which I was, you know, in terms of the artwork, I was less keen on. But here, particularly as you say, in Monarchy in the UK, I think he really sort of nails the look of Big Dave, but also parodying Postman Pat, the Royal Family. yeah, you know, it's great stuff. And of course, I think he gets Big Dave. We might be coming back to that probably infamous image of Big Dave on the toilet at some point. I also think that this was a strange time in colouring in 2000 AD, that, you know, artists, I think, were just starting to experiment with some digital colouring, but it was also the painting boom, the painted art boom was still on, and some of the reproduction of painted artwork. I noticed, particularly in the progs, towards the end of the Summer Offensive, that some of the painted art reproduction gets that sort of muddy brown that we see. Yeah. You know, and I find that off-putting. And so seeing Steve Parkhouse's crisp black and white was the highlight for me.
Oh, no, the artwork is amazing. And I think that's a good point. You know, even back then, I guess a black and white comic book strip was fairly unusual. You know, I'd been reading comic books for a long time and generally they were colour, you know, sort of to varying qualities. So I guess in comparison to the full painted artwork, you know, of people like Dermot Power, we saw a bit later on, it was a bit of a contrast, wasn't it? But I think it's again about just fitting the spirit of the story. And I think again, it just, you know, he just nails really. He gets Dave, he understands Dave. Dave has some funny facial expressions as well in there, usually just various stages of angry. Yes. But they are good. They are quite funny how they capture that. You might not like that character, but he just captures him beautifully.
And the spitting image comparison is a good shout, particularly for when he's doing the Royal Family. Yeah.
Yes. That's totally true.
I know I'm always tossing out other titles and books on the podcast that people might want to choose, but Steve Parkhouse on the Bejeffries saga with Alan Moore is one of my favourites as well, and hasn't come up on the book club yet. Okay, well, we will come back to Steve Parkhouse's wonderful artwork when we get to Grail Pages. Let's turn to Mark Miller and Grant Morrison, who I'm going to say they're doing two things. One that we know from interviews is they're making each other laugh by just doing whatever jokes they can come up with.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the other thing is that they were trying to skewer a certain part of popular culture, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's kind of clear they're having a laugh because it is so sort of, you can tell that in the sort of everything that's going on. But yeah, I mean, and reading their comics afterwards as well is they were trying to skewer, but I'm not sure what they're trying to skewer, if I'm being honest. Reading their comments, both writers seem to be skewering slightly different things for me. And, you know, they might tell me I'm wrong, that's fair enough. But, you know, obviously, I think for Mark Miller, he's very much keen to sort of to shock people, to sort of it's a reaction against the sort of, you know, was it sort of PC, was quite back, thing back the political correctness that perhaps had started to seep into society. And he's always obviously been a comic book writer who likes to go out and shock people and shake people up. And I think maybe that's what he was trying to do, where maybe Grant Morrison, he was also trying to shake people up, but he was also concerned about the sort of way that the society was changing. It was because, you know, he could see the way it was coming with like a growing lad culture, that particularly the sort of mid-90s started to take over. So, yeah, and I think maybe there is a, because of that, there's a slight crossover. And what happens is Dave tries to skewer everyone. And perhaps because of that, it's a little bit scattershot and doesn't really get his point across.
Yeah, it is interesting. I mean, we were looking at this time in the 90s, the early 90s in the UK, when we'd already got the tabloids running rampant. Mm-hmm. The Sun in particular was in its soar away phase, believing that it could and possibly had influenced political elections, but also, you know, dominating popular culture. And then this was... So we're in July 1993, but we are sort of in the early stages of lad culture, or the new lad culture, which sort of went rampant for a while. And Morrison and Miller sort of quite, in a way, prescient in sort of skewering that, I think.
Oh, definitely. But I think where does that lad culture come from? I mean, a lot of that lad culture comes from the tabloid newspapers, I think, in some respects. Like this, you know, obviously it's like taking the sort of slight softcore porn element of, say, the Sun and the Star back then with Page Threes and transferring it to magazines, isn't it? So like you were saying about FHM magazine, used to be called For Him magazine, and then 93, about the same time?
Yeah, 92, I think it changes, yeah. 92. And then it starts putting models and actresses on the front cover in early 93.
Yeah. And so there was that element in those magazines, and then Loaded came along not long after, and Loaded was probably the really important one because it really, really sort of set the tone for those mags, where they weren't just about that. There were often quite a lot of interesting journalism that went on them, but the front cover was almost always a beautiful half-naked woman. And, you know, and there was a slightly cynical commercial element because that's what attracted the readers. That's what attracted the sales. I did a bit of research, and I think James Brown was saying, was it James Brown, the editor of Loaded, that if they once put a guy on, I think they put Sacha Baron Cohen on, and then the sales dropped. So it was like, no, you've got to have half naked women on the front. So unfortunately, with that lad culture, those magazines, they got worse, didn't they, as time went on? They degraded into the weekly ones, Zoo and Nuts, where they dropped a lot of I never read them, but reading about them, it seems like they dropped a lot of the sort of interesting journalism, and it was more about just very much sort of softcore pornography that was easily accessible. And of course they once the advent of the internet 2010, those magazines have gone now, but yeah. So it unfortunately did seem like they got worse as time went on. But yeah, there was certainly a tabloidization of that sort of a market. So for me, Big Dave is an attempt to satirize the tabloid newspapers, but of course that culture seeped into the magazines. So I think while that was the main thing, they were definitely prescient about that as well, but they could see what was coming.
And Morrison and Miller have both defended the strip over the years. They've both said that they're still very proud of it and they think it's some of their best work for the prog and the funniest thing possibly they ever did together. Of course, as we've pointed out, in order to target their satire, Big Dave is offensive. He, you know, the character, he's offensive. As you say, he's racist, he's misogynist, and he's homophobic. Possibly, I mean, I suppose you could look at what the culture of Princess Diana and Princess Fergie at the time and how those, what happened to those particular people and what's changed about attitudes to them over the years. So that part perhaps hasn't aged terribly well. But the bit that really sort of has aged badly, of course, is the use of Big Dave as a very homophobic character, which is quite distressing. And I know I re-listened to Fox and Conrad talking about this on Space Spinner 2000. And I know Fox particularly couldn't see past the offensiveness of Big Dave, which, as I know, is a problem for lots of us. Does the satire work? Does it deliver what Morrison and Miller intended in, you know, pointing out the terrible nature of tabloid culture and lad culture?
Not consistently enough. They're right about what he's saying. Yeah, you know, Dave calls everyone a poof. You know, what a horrible thing to say. But, and that's awful. It's not very good at all. But I don't think that the satire is consistently on point enough to really be successful. There are times in it, and I think there are moments in it when it does do that. For example, in Monarchy in the UK, when Dave, this is a really controversial bit now. I don't think a British comic would ever get away with this, where Dave confuses, can't tell the difference between the real royals and the robot royals. And the robot royals are really naff. Like the Queen Mother is basically a dustbin on wheels. You know, they are not exactly accurate depictions. But Dave kills the real royals. And then he goes off on a speech about, you know, no one telling Britain what to do, hands off Britain. And that, I think, works as satire because that is, obviously, he's just done something incredibly stupid and then came out with tabloid rhetoric, which has been obviously been undercut by his own actions. It's very much, you know, shooting yourself in the foot. So I think there are moments like that where actually, yes, that works. You can see what he's done there. So I think that works really well. There's the bit at the end of the first story, Target Baghdad, maybe not satire, but certainly, again, the writer's prescience, where that last picture after Big Dave and Big Tail have defeated Saddam and, you know, the Iraqi people are free of his tyranny, and they're all of a sudden in the back, the Iraqi people are celebrating, and all of a sudden posters for British goods are going up, and there's even a Vogue Conservative poster going up. And that kind of predicted what happened after the second Gulf War, where lots of British companies went back in, you know, to help with the reconstruction, but also to make money out of it. I think those moments work. That's in hindsight, I guess, with that one, though. But I think too often it doesn't. Dave is too unpleasant, and there is enough of that undercutting of it. You know, it's not enough that he's awful, and people are supposed to get the joke. I think even Mark Miller said that they were surprised the readers didn't really understand what they were trying to do with that. But they were expecting a lot of the readership, you know, relatively young readership, I would imagine, of 2000 AD, to understand what was going on with the tabloid papers.
And that comment is in the Thrill Power Overload section on Big Dave. Yes. As you say, Morrison and Miller both saying that they can't understand why people didn't get the point. That anybody, you know, people are just missing the point of Big Dave. It's also, I think Grant Morrison mentions it in Super Gods. I know Mark Miller's talked about it in other interviews. It's a strip that's been reassessed recently by a couple of blogs. I know we'll talk about your blog in a moment, but you also, I can't remember who did the Sequart analysis of it that you linked to. There's another one I found, of which is by Will Coolin, who's been on the book club yonks ago. But
yes,
it's, you know, people have talked about it and reassessed it and looked back at the difficulty and the satire of Big Dave. So how was it for yourself when you came to reappraise the strip, to reread it, and then to write about it on your blog?
It wasn't easy, actually, because I've obviously got the comic books, and I read them again and decided it was an interesting comic book strip to write about, and I wanted to be fair to it and give a fair appraisal, you know. And I came away with thinking it was not quite as bad as I initially remember, because I think I had a better understanding of what they were attempting to do. I still think, like I say, the creators were trying to satirise the British tabloid newspapers. But I could also see that I don't think it worked, because, you know, it wasn't successful in that. And I think there was a few reasons for that. It certainly wasn't an easy thing. I had to really think about it before writing, because I didn't want to particularly get embroiled on one side or the other. You know, it's having a proper assessment of this comic book strip. And don't get me wrong, it does some awful things. Dave is a horrific, horrible character. And I think there's a bit of a problem at the heart of that. Dave is, you know, a member of the sort of working class, or maybe even, I hate to say this word, but an underclass, you know, who would have been demonized by the tabloid newspapers. And, you know, the tabloid newspapers in the 90s, it's hard to think about it now, but they were tremendously powerful. The Sun, you know, used to sell 4 million copies a day, and more people than that read it every day. So it was tremendously influential. Governments used to, you know, British prime ministers used to have to sort of go cap in hand to them if they wanted something. That's how powerful they were. You know, obviously the Sun be the leading one, you know, obviously Rupert Murdoch being incredibly powerful. But they also demonised a lot of people, you know, who were purportedly supposed to be their readers. You know, obviously there was the Liverpool fans and after Hillsborough, they horrendously disgracefully, had a real go at them. And obviously it's taken a lot of, you know, many, many years for the victims of Hillsborough to get the justice they absolutely deserved. You know, obviously in the 80s and early 90s, you know, they, you know, victims of the HIV AIDS pandemic, you know, the Sun was awful about those. It was disgraceful. You know, it's been racist. It's been homophobic. It's been, you know, it was anti-immigration. And Dave was very much one of the group of people in Britain that the Sun would have hated, you know. And I think Mila Morrison used him specifically because of that. You know, they took the worst person possible, but then made him an advocate for these tabloid newspapers. And I'm not sure it entirely works because of that. If you compare Dave to another of Grant Morrison's working class heroes, Dane from The Invisibles, which was only out a year later, Dane was a much more compelling working class hero. He was just as angry, but the more believable and nuanced. Obviously, Dave, that's not what they're going for with Big Dave. They took all the nuance out. But I think because of that juxtaposition, it is difficult. And throughout the comic book as well, you've got, though, in the caption box, it's the language of the Sun. You know, it's like Kelvin McKenzie is in your ear, egging him on. So they almost can't decide whether he's the hero or the villain. But the only thing I would say is that he also pretty much takes down most of the institutions that a jingoistic, patriotic newspaper like the Sun would hold up. You know, the British government, the royal family, the British army, you know, he lays waste to almost all of them in some way. So he could be seen as an avenging angel. But because he's such an awful depiction, you know, I think it doesn't work. It can be seen to be pandering to those awful tabloid views.
And it's interesting, you just reminded me, of course, because the other sort of working class hero made good from Grant Morrison for 2000 AD was Zenith, who, and the character Zenith and his manager sort of played the tabloid game, didn't they? In fact, they were more interested in playing the tabloid game than superheroics, obviously. You know, he was more interested in his pop career and sleeping with page three girls if it was good for his career. Anyway, I want to talk a little bit about the response to Big Dave, because we've got a couple of examples, basically, that appear in the letters page in the Nerve Centre. It's Prog 849. We get quite a long letter published by Richard Griffiths. And Richard Griffiths makes a lot of reasonable points, particularly about treatment of Iraq war veterans, the society's problem with dangerous dogs. As I say those two things, I note that as a society, we've still not sorted those out 30 years later. But he also, and I don't want to be critical of Richard Griffiths, but he suggests that Morrison and Miller haven't watched popular TV or read tabloid newspapers, when in a way we know exactly that they had been, and that's what they were going at. So his letter is interesting as a sort of like leading the criticism of Big Dave. And then he gets a response, again, quite a lengthy response from Tharg as well.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the whole point of something like satire is that, it creates an opening to discuss the topic, the subject. So I guess in that respect, it was quite good that there was a discussion in the letters pages. So, you know, it's a good, healthy thing. The letter is furious. It is really furious. It is fairly articulate. I've been rereading it again. Right at the end, he asks to cancel it. And I must admit, I did think that was probably slightly going too far. But he also made lots of valid points in there, and as did the response from 2000 AD. But again, I think it was a slightly confused response because they couldn't make his mind up whether it was an attack on the political correctness or on the tabloids. It can only be one or other of those. I think the editorial response is probably slightly more on the tabloids. So I think unfortunately there wasn't the following debate wasn't in the latest page wasn't particularly good, was it? It wasn't a particularly nuanced. It's not like there was a lot of discussion about the effectiveness of the British tabloid press in the latest page afterwards. So probably, you know, the debate didn't go far enough, unfortunately.
Yeah, because Prog 849, you get Richard Griffiths, you get Tharg, both with long pieces, both articulate. Both of them, I think, make points that I don't agree with, both the letter and the response. Mm-hmm. But then in 855, we get the response to Richard Griffiths' letter printed, several responses printed on the letters page. And here I feel that Tharg completely misstepped and just let the almost a tabloid response take over. And I know that some of the letter writers were deliberately imitating Big Dave. They were doing the Big Dave joke.
Yeah.
But it became, I found those letters, one in particular, I found quite offensive, even though I know they were trying to make the joke. But it just didn't work. And Tharg's decision to print those, I always found slightly difficult. And looking at it now, I think, yeah, you think you got that one wrong, Tharg.
Yeah, and there was also right at the end of Tharg trying to like put an end to it. He was like, that's the last of that debate. Yeah. So you could almost sense, like, I don't want any more of this discussion. It's not a good discussion. It had become slightly toxic. Yeah, and several of those letters, yeah, but you're right, one in particular, just, you know, they were probably slightly tongue-in-cheek, but it could be read in a way that would actually be quite offensive. I'd be rereading it again. I was quite shocked, actually. It was, unfortunately, I don't think Big Dave opened the sort of debate that maybe the creators wanted from it, unfortunately.
Yeah, I thought it might happen in the first letters page or after the first letters page, and then it comes back, whatever it is, six progs later, and it's terrible, I thought. And then Tharg says, case closed, that's it, no more discussion. If I go back to Tharg's response to Richard Griffiths' letter, I'll note that he accuses Richard, or, you know, accused perhaps a strong word, but he suggests that Richard Griffiths is falling sort of prey to what he calls politically correct dogma, which seems, again, a bit of an unfortunate phrase 30 years later. But he also says, to sign off with, that he agrees with Richard Griffiths that Big Dave is not satire. And then he says, it's not satire, it's a warning. And you and I were talking about this off air, that, you know, this is a line that 2000 AD has trotted out from time to time, often in criticisms of Judge Dredd. Is it a little bit of a get-out clause for them, where they can just say that, that this stuff is not, you know, intended as satire, it's intended to warn society?
I think, I mean, for me, I think Big Dave is a satire, you know. I think it is a slight cop-out. I mean, the whole thing about Dredd, you know, obviously, is that, you know, it also... There is a juxtaposition at the heart of Dredd that obviously, while it is satirising what's happened with the police and society, it also has a hero who's a fascist super cop, and that is a problem. And actually, Michael Mulcher's book, Eye and the Law, recognises that. And I think that's the while you could argue, looking back in hindsight, that obviously Big Dave is a warning. We're warning about the sort of lad culture. I don't know if that works back then. You know, I suppose you could argue they were being quite prescient. So yeah, so I'm not sure. I'm not sure about that. I think it would have been better to sort of argue that this was an attempt to to satirise the tabloid press, which for me it is. I think with that, I think what cements that for me is the front page, which is a newspaper. I mean, you know, that was a tabloid newspaper. So obviously that's what they're trying to do. You know, maybe Big Dave came out 5 years later, it would have been like the cover of Loaded, who knows. But yeah. So I'm not sure that argument works, to be honest. I mean, it's like slightly having your cake and eat it, isn't it? It's not a satire, it's a warning. Yeah. Well, thanks for that.
Yeah. Particularly when the creators have said it's a satire.
Yeah,
it's a satire, guys. You're missing the point. Why aren't you getting it? Okay, I mean, I was slightly disappointed. I knew that there had been discussion in the letters pages, and if there's discussion that happened after Prog 855, somebody let me know, because I actually found the discussion in the letter pages rather disappointing. You know, particularly Prog 855. I thought, you know, the discussion between Tharg and Richard Griffiths was reasonable, and actually I wanted more of that, but it just didn't seem to happen. Okay, so let's just say that Big Dave has not yet been collected by Rebellion. Probably won't be. No. We don't know, but probably won't be. You'll have to go back to the progs for this one. And there's the two other stories later on. There's the football one, which is where Steve Parkhouse returns on with coloured art. I've forgotten who did the... I've got it here in my notes. It's Anthony Williams who does the Big Dave on holiday on the Costa del Chaos, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And does a sort of attempt at Steve Parkhouse art, but I didn't find that as funny as Parkhouse's wonderful drawings. Big Dave comes back, and then, thankfully, as far as I know, we haven't seen him since, have we?
No, I can't imagine we're ever going to see him again. Although, who knows? I can't imagine that the current guys running 2000 AD would ever let that sort of thing happen. But, you know, they seem to know what they're doing. I think the idea that Big Dave could, say, get, you know, brought out as a graphic novel or as a trade paperback, it wouldn't happen. In today's climate as well, I just can't see it ever happening.
Let's turn to easier ground. Before I ask you for your final sort of summing up of what you feel about Big Dave, let's turn to easier ground. Steve Parkhouse artwork. I'm sure we'd both like to own a piece of Steve Parkhouse artwork. I would love a piece of black and white artwork. I'm not sure, again, this Big Dave might fall into that well-known original art category of stuff you'd like to own but not necessarily hang on the wall. Let's play Grail Pages. Let's imagine that we can afford any of these pages, or the two covers for the prog that Big Dave got. What's going to be your choice of artwork to virtually own?
So the first one would be the cover of Prog 843.
The Super Soroway 2000 AD.
Yeah.
Doomsdave for...
Doomsdave for Saddam.
Yeah.
It's still one of my favourite 2000 AD covers because it nails the spirit and the look of tabloid newspapers, particularly from them, from that period as well. You know, the terrible pun in the headline, the silly side stories. One's about Saddam Hussein on an ostrich, the other one's about Robert Maxwell turning up. I think he must have just died as well, turning up in a washing machine. They're just very silly. They're almost something you'd see in Private Eye and the comedy pages in Private Eye Today, you know. So that picture of John Major looking slightly terrified with the security men behind. So yeah, I really like that. You know, I don't know where I'd put it, but I do like that cover quite a lot. You know, it just capture the you know, certain moments in British culture, I think, rather wonderfully.
It perhaps makes the point better than anything else, really, is the cover for 843, which we'll grant you virtually as your Grail cover now. And it's sort of, you know, in a way, I'm sorry to go back to poor Richard Griffiths, but it does say, sort of make the point, of course they knew what they were doing with the tabloids. Yeah.
Yeah, they absolutely did. Yeah, they absolutely. They knew what they were doing. So, you know, they really did. I think perhaps they were a bit confused about the ultimate aim, but yeah. For me, it was the newspapers.
And an interior page.
Oh, well, this is an easy one.
Yes.
I've got a couple, but this is the most obvious one is the episode one of Monarchy in the UK. It's a full-page piece of art of Big Dave sitting on the toilet, reading a newspaper, and just glorious. There's no getting around it. He's got a Union Jack on the wall. The toilet is overflowing. One of the pit bulls is in the corner. God knows what it's doing. There is grime and cans, and there's also a pack of cornflakes and a bowl of cereal and a bottle of milk on it. And it's glorious in its detail, and it kind of sums up Dave in his awfulness. As well, it just sums him up perfectly, and again, Steve Parkhouse sort of, you know, nailing the character. And there's also a wonderful descriptive word as well, which I don't think I'd ever seen before. Gloob. It describes the toilet, whatever was going on in the toilet, sort of perfectly as well. And the best thing about it, what also is perfect as well, is the setup of the first page is there's a cheery postman who's a parody of Postman Pat. He's going to Dave's flat, and the place is a, you know, desolate area of destruction, probably because Dave's destroyed everything. But he's incredibly cheery. You know, he's the classic sort of cheery Postman Pat character. And then you're reading all of this, and then you're wondering what's going to happen the next page, and you turn around, and there is Big Dave on the toilet, on the throne. And it's just a wonderful, again, it's that, he does humour brilliantly. It's just a wonderful bit of pacing. It's great.
Fantastic. Well, there you go. The cover for 843 and the interior page from, I'm guessing it's going to be, let's have a look.
Oh, I've got it here.
846.
I think so, yeah. I mean, like you say, I don't think I'd ever be allowed to put that up on the wall.
No, exactly. You just want to keep it in the portfolio under the bed, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. To look at occasionally and then feel a bit naughty.
Well, we'll grant you both of those. I should have prepared better because those were both on my list, but guests, of course, get the pick. I will probably pick a page with the royal families as robots, but I will post the image when this episode comes out. Anything with the royal families as robots was quite funny.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There is a lot, particularly in that story, there is a lot of strong stuff. I also particularly like in the last episode of Monarchy in the UK when Dave, Di and Fergie go to war against the British Army, and there's two pages. And the first one is just Dave running towards the British Army with Fergie on his shoulders firing a gun, and Di sort of backing them up, and then the next, and then it sort of fades out, and then the next, you don't see any of the fighting. The next page is to the aftermath, and it's four horizontal panels just surveying the devastation. So you never see any fighting, but you would know exactly what's happened. And it, again, it's just his ability to tell a story. The next page is after that is really good, but I prefer that moment because it's just the action is rather unsettling, really, to be honest. But and controversial, but a great piece of storytelling.
I've talked about this on another podcast, but Steve Parkhouse has that ability to just draw funny. You know, that his drawings are funny to look at, even though he might be dealing with the most offensive stuff possible in Big Dave. But yeah, okay, right. Well, I will post all these images on all the various socials and the 2080 forums when this episode comes out, so you can see what Peter and I have been talking about. And like I say, you're going to have to track down the progs to read Big Dave. I'm also going to put links in the show notes to your blog, which we'll get to in a moment, Peter, but also the two other articles that we've mentioned in passing so that people can read some quite interesting takes on Big Dave. Now, big question, of course, sum it up for us. Did you enjoy going back to Big Dave and do you think it made its point?
I did quite enjoy going back and reading it again. Do you know, I don't think it quite made its point. I don't think it worked.
Right. I mean, I'm... You know, as I said to you again off air, I found this one of the more challenging asks for me to go back because I thought, oh, I don't really want to go back and read all that offensive stuff that upset me at the time and has upset me more since. But I did find reading around Big Dave fascinating.
Yeah.
And reading about particularly what Morrison, Miller and Parkhouse were intending. And there's, you know... In a way, the response to the strip is possibly the most fascinating part of it. And as we've said already, if you talk about the other four stories in the Summer Offensive, nobody's really remembering them or talking about them. And if they remember Inferno, it's probably because, as you say yourself, it's a pale imitation of the great Dread epics. Fascinating stuff, Peter. When you sent me the email, I thought, But great to talk about it.
Well, thank you for having me. I did for ages about emailing you because I know it is a really difficult to talk about a subject. You know, I think Big Dave kind of fails really to really get his point across and comes across as really offensive. I think there are some things it does well. I think there's some amazing artwork. But it's just such an interesting comic strip.
Great stuff. Let's turn to guest projects. We've mentioned your blog a few times. Tell us about thehindsighthut.com. What you do on your blog, what we'll find there.
So I call it The Hindsight Hut is because I can't keep up with the sheer amount of new popular culture. So I set myself a rule that I only write about stuff from the past. So anything made in the last 10 years, I won't write about. And that basically a bit of a get out, so I'm not under pressure to write about new stuff all the time because I'm very slow at writing. I've come from a writing background and I wanted to keep that going. So I set up the Hut a couple of years ago just to look at, you know, to sort of reassess sort of media from the past. At first it was stuff that I sort of remembered and thought, oh yeah, I need to look at that again. And that's where Big Dave came from. So so it's a semi-regular blog about media from the past. Books, TV, films, mainly science fiction, television as well, but not always. Sometimes it just depends what comes into my brain sometimes.
And I note, looking through your blog, that you have articles about television that's particularly relevant to my other podcasts, where I talk about British television science fiction. You've done The Fades, you've done Chocky, and of course, a particular favourite, Edge of Darkness.
Yeah, well, Edge of Darkness, before I discovered it, was not a show I'd ever heard of, which is to my, you know, obviously, because I'm very stupid, clearly. Because when I watched it, I was blown away. What I had actually been doing is researching a film called Slipstream, which was, and I managed to find it online, and Bob Peck's in that, and I was kind of blown away because he was really good. The film's not great, but he's amazing. And I hadn't him that he was the bloke from Jurassic Park. So I was like, well, what else has he been in? And once I did a bit of research, Edge of Darkness just stood out. So when I watched it, I was like blown away by the quality of it. It's really timeless, classic piece of television. And it just struck me back then that it was, I wrote why it was still relevant. And I still think it worked, you know, that piece holds up. But, you know, I was surprised. I actually was surprised about how many people were so enthusiastic about Edge of Darkness, but I can see why. It's been brilliant. So, yeah, I do. I read a lot about TV, the Chucky TV show, because I remember watching it as a child. I do like science fiction. I recently wrote a blog, a profile of the author Nicholas Fisk.
Oh, right, yeah.
Yeah, so, again, that's because I was a big fan of his work, but I'm quite proud of that as well. So, yeah, that was a bit of a labour of love, really. So yeah, there's, you know, if you're interested in that sort of stuff, please check my website out. You know, I will try and add to it as the years go by, but it just takes a while.
Well, go to megacitybookclub.com or go straight to thehindsighthut.com or look in the show notes for this episode. You'll find a link to Peter's blog and you'll find a link to his article about Big Dave and also those two other blog articles we've been talking about as well. All the links will be there in the show notes and on the website. Great stuff, Peter. TheHindsightHut.com.
Thanks ever so much for having me, Eamon. It's been a pleasure.
No trouble at all. Now, once we're off air, or perhaps by emailing mcbcpodcast@gmail.com, I'll get you to give me your address and I'll send you this, which is your book club coaster that all my guests get, as you're now part of the club. And, yeah, thank you so much for giving up your time this Monday evening to talk about possibly the most difficult strip we've had to cover.
Thank you. I know I do realise it's not an easy one. I hope I've tried to provide a sort of a balanced assessment of it. You know, I don't want to come across like I'm some lover of that sort of thing. So I hope that's what I hope it comes across as. That's when I wrote the original piece, because, you know, I don't think they were going out of their way to be awful. I think they were trying to shock.
Yes.
And satirise and like I say, I don't think it worked. Dave is a pretty awful character. Probably best consigned to the history books.
Yeah, left in the progs.
Definitely. Yeah.
Okay, great stuff, Peter. And thank you to everyone for listening to Megacity Book Club. As we've said, megacitybookclub.com. Follow the pod on all the socials, Facebook, Threads, Instagram, Mastodon, Blue Sky, probably a new social platform called Alien Love Gun, and you'll find us on the 2000 AD forums, where you'll get to see the Grail pages we've been talking about. Email me like Peter did at mcbcpodcast@gmail.com. And until next time, when we're passing judgment on another great book, it's a goodbye from me and...
Is it goodbye from me? Yeah.